Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Oregon, a winner over South Carolina.
Duquesne can do 71-67, their first NCAA tournament win since 1969.
Maybe now they know where Oakland is. An 80-76 upset victory over Kentucky.
Westwood One NCAA Radio Network. The story of day one of the NCAA tournament, Oakland. Greg Campy, their head coach, who joined us in the 7 a.m. Eastern hour. You can go back on the podcast, ESPN app, or wherever you get your pods and listen back to that. Plus, you can still fill out your brackets, Tournament Challenge app for the women's brackets. That gets going today. You can create and join groups to compete against others and join the ESPN Radio women's group to play against us for the women's tournament. The app also makes it easy to share your champion Final Four picks across your social channels. So that's been the story, guys, that Kentucky goes down and that the state of Kentucky basketball is kind of now in question. As to what is it now? What is it, because historically, it's been this great program, but now in two of the last 3 years, lost to double-digit seeds. John Calipari is not taking his team deep into the tournament. And of all the action yesterday, and there was good action all over the place, but that's the biggest storyline.
Yeah, they're the Dallas Cowboys of college basketball.
Yep.
Like, they have early exits, but it's got a great brand, and they're historically great.
And a lot of star power.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of star power, right? Mm-hmm. And a coach that's won a championship, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the Dallas Cowboys are.
Wow.
That's Kentucky basketball.
The parallel is there.
I mean, that's what
good,
it is. And
comp.
So you're wondering, is Coach Cal the one that gets this thing turned around and gets it back on track where they're competing for championships? We saw it in the early 2010s, even in the mid-2010s, but the success just hasn't been there. The last three NCAA tournaments, they haven't been able to advance to the second weekend. In the year before that, they were outside looking into the tournament altogether. I mean, it's been, what, since 2015, 2016, since we've seen Cal in a Final Four? At some point, something about that has to change because Kentucky basketball fans ain't going to stand for anything less.
No, absolutely. They're in the worst five-game NCAA tournament stretch in program history. Mm. That is not a place that you want to be if you're a Kentucky fan, or the standard that needs to be met if you're a fan of that program. But the question that I come to, because it's easy to just complain about the situation or point fingers at Coach Cal, is what are they going to do to get it turned around? Because the recruiting is there, the star power is there, the talent is certainly there, but it's not translating in the tournament. So what's the answer if you're Kentucky? Is it to change the way you're recruiting, to maybe try to bring in maybe some veteran guys who, or kids that you know might want to stay there a little bit longer to develop that cohesion, that chemistry, if you don't think that the one and done is working? Is it to change the way that you're coaching, maybe change the system up a little bit? Or is it to make a change at the head coaching position, which I think is probably the last option on the list, given everything that Coach Cal has done for that program and the success that he's had historically? But I think a lot of Kentucky fans are asking that question today. How long of a leash does he have?
Well, the last option is probably the most expensive option because Coach Cal has a $33 million buyout. Now, that buyout goes down to $27 million after next season. Mm-hmm. So maybe that becomes the conversation around Kentucky basketball this summer. It's, hey, you're a lame duck coach unless – the lame duck coach that has the opportunity to earn, you know, future years in your contract if you go on a deep tournament run next year. So mm-hmm. It's like, okay, what are you going to do in the 2025 NCAA tournament? Can you get to the Sweet 16 or better? Maybe that will buy you a little more leash in Kentucky, but you can't just keep having these weekends in the first round of the tournament where you get embarrassed, because that's bad for the brand of Kentucky basketball. And when we're seeing now in the SEC, so in their league play, but also across the landscape of college basketball, all of these other programs by virtue of NIL are able to catch up, because now they can go after the kids that are one and done too, and seemingly their collectives can offer up more money than what Kentucky can pay them. So even though you have the legacy of what you've been able to put together in Kentucky and all of the great NBA players that we're currently watching, These other schools can give these players coming out of high school a bag of money on their way to their NBA career. So I guess if you're Coach Cal, that's the biggest part that you have to contend with. Like, these other schools seemingly catching up to you in the SEC and in college basketball as a whole.
If you look at mock drafts, Kentucky has two guys in the top 5 or 10.
Yeah.
And they neither of them start for them.
Yeah. I mean, they got five guys on this team over the last 2 years that are top 25 recruits.
Let me ask you a question.
Five. Think about five. I've got five guys.
I think they're all freshmen too, right?
Yeah, the five guys that are top 25 recruits. Five.
I don't want to make it seem like John Calipari does not have value. He has extreme value. If I said to you right now, though, there's three options for a job for John Calipari. He could run your sports agency. He could be the president of an NBA team for you, if you're the owner of the team, governor of the team, or he coaches your college. Which one do you want?
Which one do I want?
Which one would you want him doing? Like, you could place John Calipari at a job and say, you're going to be better at this job than most.
But see, here's the problem with doing that. Coach Cal is a coach. Like, he's a coach. So, I mean, you could put him in these different roles and he'll probably have success because of the traits that he has.
Right.
But is he going to have the same passion? That's the thing. The passion is what makes these guys great. They want to develop men through the vehicle of their sport. In this case, we're talking about basketball. I don't know that Coach Cal would be as good at recruiting if it wasn't for the opportunity to be able to coach this kid and teach him life and teach him the game of basketball through competition. I just don't know. So that's the tough part. Like, but the fact that you're asking that question is a part of the problem when it comes to what Kentucky basketball is going to do moving forward, because it hasn't been great results on the court.
Right.
And this is a results-oriented business. Make no mistake about it. When it comes to pro sports, and now with the monetization of these athletes earlier on in their career, it's in college sports. It is a results business, and the performance for Kentucky, especially this time of year, hasn't been good enough. Guess what? The time of year that everybody starts paying attention to college basketball is March Madness. This is when we start parachuting in. Conference tournaments and all of that stuff leading up to it, and then what actually happens once we get in the tournament. And based on the recent results, you know, there isn't a whole lot to hold on to for Kentucky basketball fans in terms of their overall success. And it affects how everybody perceives your program overall.
And we're not talking about exits in the Elite Eight or the Final Four.
Nah.
We're talking about double-digit seeds underdogs beating Kentucky in the early rounds for, what is it, 4 years now, 5 years now that we're talking about?
Four or five, yeah.
That sample size, right? So it's not like this is a one-off season where this has happened, and it's not as if we are being critical of this team because they're getting knocked out in the Elite Eight or Final Four and they're not hanging a banner. We're talking about teams like Oakland being able to come in and play better than you in the tournament. And that's an indictment on the state of the program right now.
And because, I mean, you think about day one of the NCAA tournament. Duquesne, great win against BYU. Big story, not Kentucky.
LeBron right? James getting them sneakers is pretty cool,
right.
too.
Keith Emery, his old guy.
Pretty
St. Vincent,
that.
St. Mary's back cool. in the day, right? Like, Dayton has an amazing 17-point comeback victory over Nevada, even though they were favored in that game. We're the higher seed. Okay, whatever. We're going to have the Rick Barnes Bowl, Texas versus Tennessee, right? He coached both teams. He coaches Tennessee now. We're going to see Altman, who is the coach of Oregon, against his old school, Creighton. None of those are as big of a storyline right now as John Calipari in Kentucky, because John Calipari is an NBA lottery machine. He lives at the lottery the way that Elgin Baylor lived at the lottery drawing, right? Back in the day with the Clippers, where he'd always be there for the drawing of the balls. He's at the draft. Every year, John Calipari is at the draft congratulating young men and their families. I am so proud of you. You came in here. You were a young man. You're now an adult. You're going to the NBA. You're going to make millions. Take care of your family, and I'm always going to be here for you. There's no evidence otherwise. John Calipari is not a come in now and forget about him later kind of guy. But in terms of on-court basketball success, he's not even a top 10 coach in college basketball. It's not close. You cannot even put him in the same category as guys like Bill Self right now, right? You just, or Tom Izzo. You just can't. Every single year, based on the talent they have, they seemingly underachieve. And I don't know what he thinks the job is, but all of us think the job is winning games in college.
Well, it's also happening at a program where the standards are through the roof.
Yeah.
And so that compounds all of this. It's not just that he's got the talent and they're having the early exits year after year. It's that he's doing so at a place where the standard is championship or bust every single season. I mean, I went to Illinois. Illinois is a great basketball program. They were in the national championship in 2005. they won the Big Ten tournament. The standards are not the same at Illinois, even though they've had a lot of success historically in basketball than they are at Kentucky. And that's a huge part of this conversation, is that the standards there are just so through the roof that being able to recruit the talent and being able to punch your ticket to the dance or be in the mix is simply not good enough there.
I don't know that. Let's use your school for as an example, since you just brought it up. At Illinois, if I told Illinois right now, you're going to have four seasons. One, you're not going to make the tournament. Two of them you're going to lose in the first round, and one you're going to lose in the second round, and two in the first round are going to be the double-digit seats. I don't think Illinois signs up for that.
They do
not. I think
not.
Brad Underwood, their head coach, gets fired as a result.
1,000% he gets fired because of that at Illinois. And Brad Underwood is an outstanding coach and an outstanding recruiter. But at Illinois, that's not the standard that you need to be meeting.
Yet Kentucky, we're fine?
Well, we're not fine, but you also have to take into account what Cal has already done for the
Correct.
Program, right?
That's a huge part of this conversation. Like
well, we didn't with Tubby Smith. Tubby Smith won a championship. Tubby Smith went to the postseason a ton. Tubby Smith produced NBA players. Like, we could say we have to take into account what he's done for the program, and he has. I'm not downplaying that. But so did Tubby Smith. So did Rick Pitino. Like, Cal's not the only guy in Kentucky history to do this. Like, Roy Williams.
Yeah, but I mean, here's the thing. Cal got rid of Tubby Smith, and then they were able to get Coach Cal. I mean, Kentucky got rid of Tubby Smith and got Coach Cal.
Right.
If you get rid of Coach Cal, who are you going to get that's better?
Billy Donovan. That's my, I mean, you know, that's my
Does Billy Donovan want the job?
Well, that's the other part of it. That's the other
but
part.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, does somebody else that has a bigger profile that's going to be able to attract the level of recruits that they're accustomed to seeing, that's going to be able to bring to those guys together in order to do high-level winning in the tournament, is that person someone that wants to come to Kentucky?
Yeah, and with the state of college
especially
athletics,
with the expectations being what they are, is right. that somebody that wants to sign up for that?
Right, and with the state of college athletics right now, I don't know how many people who are in the pros that are viewing that as a better option, even if you're making a lot of money and it is at a blue blood program like that. Just the thought of being in the NBA and then having to come back and recruit and deal with the transfer portal and all of that, it just seems like a big nightmare that you wouldn't want to take on.
I'll give you another name to answer the question that CeCe asked, and sorry to do this to him, but okay. Bruce Pearl. Been successful at Tennessee, been successful at Auburn. Kentucky is definitively a bigger program than both of those on the men's side. Bruce Pearl. I think
Bruce Pearl is a good coach. Don't get me wrong. But Bruce Pearl does not have the same cachet that Coach Cal does.
Well, no one does.
And that's the problem.
Right.
But that's the problem.
Right.
That's what we're talking about. That's the bind that Kentucky finds themselves in, which is why transitioning away to a different coach is going to be so problematic, because everybody in the prep circuit, the AAU circuit, all of these prep players have this affinity for Coach Cal because he does exactly what you said.
Yep.
He's at the draft every year with all of these kids. They all know they can keep in touch with him. He doesn't bail on any single one of them. They all have a direct line to him. All of these young players know that because they grow up idolizing and emulating, and some even have relationships with these other guys that are in the league. There are players that are in the preps that have relationships with AD and Jamal Murray and all of the Tyrese Maxey and Emmanuel Quickly. All of these other Devin Booker, all of these Kentucky guys, they know these dudes. They know them.
Yep.
And they say, look, man, Coach Cal going to take care of you. He's going to make sure that you're ready for the NBA. He's going to make sure that you're ready to handle adulthood, all of those different things. The winning becomes ancillary for those players. They go to Kentucky because they want Coach Cal. If you're the Kentucky program, you want the players because they're talented. The only problem is those talented players haven't equated to NCAA tournament success. That is the conundrum, the quagmire that Kentucky basketball finds themselves in. And firing Coach Cal, it might make you feel good in the short term, but I think it sets you up for even more problems down the road.
We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Seth Greenberg, ESPN college basketball analyst, of course, former head coach. It's always great on the tournament, and he joins us. Now, Coach, thanks so much for a couple of minutes. Let's start with Kentucky, the biggest story from yesterday, and we've been talking a ton about John Calipari. I'll ask you what I've asked everyone today. What is Calipari's job? Is it to get players to the NBA or to win college titles?
No, it's just to get to the Final Four and compete for national championships. And, you know, look, it was an awful loss. You can't let the other two teams' two best players beat you, plain and simple. And that's exactly what happened last night. John Calipari, and this is what I'm going to say all day, and, you know, John Calipari has been a friend for 47 years. All right? John Calipari's got to go back to old school John Calipari, not swaggy Cal, old school Cal, where his teams were tough, physical, played with a chip, competed at a very high level, drew a line in the sand every play, and it was a team you did not want to play against. Right? That's who he needs to be, because last night they got punked. Oakland was the harder playing, toughest team right from the beginning of the game. Ball went up on the glass. I think Oakland had like five or six consecutive offensive rebounds. That was a message sent. And then Gokey, I mean, like, you know, coming into the game, he was only taking 8 2-point shots. Eight 2-point shots. You got to run them off the 3-point line. They should have defended him probably with a bigger defender. Now, he made some tough shots. But the two guys that couldn't beat you, Townsend and Gokey, those are two guys that beat him. So John Calipari is a great coach. But he, you know, as progressive as he's been, and he's been progressive, you know, right now you don't win with freshmen. You can have great freshmen, but you need a foundation of upperclassmen to bring you the toughness, someone to coach your locker room. And that's got to change. I mean, that's got to change. So can you replace him? I don't know who you replace him with, but you know, these last few years have not been representative of who he is.
So, Seth, in order for him to go back to old school Cal, how does he make that change? Are you suggesting that he recruits differently, that he brings in more veteran guys? How does he get back to that and have his teams look like old school Cal teams?
So I think a little bit of that, but I think a little bit of his approach, a little bit of how he coaches his team. Like, you can't be afraid to coach your team. You can't be afraid to coach your team hard. The standard's the standard. And he set the standard very high. He set the standard high at UMass. He set the standard high at Memphis. When he went to Kentucky, he set the standard high. They were a team other people didn't want to play against. I don't think anyone fears this team because, you know, they're built on the offensive end, not the defensive end. When things are going good, they were good. When they faced some adversity, they were not tough enough to get through it. They didn't have any identity defensively at all. And you all season long say, well, you guys are making shots against us. Yeah, they're making shots against you because you didn't take enough away. And that's not old school Cal. I mean, his old school teams were elite, elite defensive teams. In the last 3 or 4 years, they haven't been that team. So coach your team harder. And you know, it's kind of hard. I'm not saying be demeaning, but be demanding. And he's so concerned, and in a good way, because he cares so much. Again, like I said, we've been friends for 47 years, about the well-being of his players. The mental health issue is real these days, that he's trying to be a confidence giver. And Bob Rotella works with him, who works with all these golfers. And that's great. But there's still got to be a standard, and there's got to be a standard you hold your team to every single day in practice, every time they walk on the court. It's easy to go to an individual workout and get up shots. Can you do the tough things consistently? And this team has not done the tough things consistently.
Coach, what's the perception of Coach Cal in college basketball when it comes to the best coaches in the sport, right? I feel like the early exits in the NCAA tournament the last 3 years have kind of worn some of the luster off of Coach Cal, the brand. What is he perceived as in terms of, you know, the best coaches that are out there in college basketball?
I think fellow coaches or perception nationally. I think there are two things. And fellow coaches really respect Cal. He's one of the voices of our game. I think the guys that really know him have seen a change in him. a kinder, gentler Cal in terms of how their teams play, more offensive-oriented Cal. Although, you know, like when he said, like, you know, we knew the zone was going to give us a problem. I cannot believe he said that. You knew that for a week when you want to play against the zone. That's all they've played all season. But the perception of Cal is he's a terrific coach, but that he's always been ahead of the curve in terms of marketing, recruiting, you know, NIL and everything else. But he's lost, I think, and again, I can say this, and he knows that I have a job and that I don't have an agenda. He's lost a little bit of his edge in terms of living it 24/7.
Wow. Talking with Seth Greenberg, ESPN College Basketball.
I say by living it, yeah. it's not the business of college basketball, but being in the gym, you got to live in the gym. Here's a perfect example. I'm driving in today to do the stuff I'm doing this morning, and I'm on the phone with Tom Izzo, and we're talking about his game last night, preparing for North Carolina and things of that nature, what they're going to try to do. And he sends me a video, and the video is of his team last night. Now, they played yesterday. They beat Mississippi State in a brutal, tough game, right? Physical game, great win, quote-unquote upset win. 10:30 last night. They're not at Ruth Chris celebrating. You know, on the top of the rooftop of their hotel, doing a walkthrough in preparation for North Carolina.
Wow.
Now think about that. You just beat Mississippi State. You're advancing. You got 36 hours to prepare. They're on the rooftop. I think we're going to use it. You know, I got to take the sound out because there's some calls and things on it. They're on the rooftop. I'm not sure. Yeah, that mindset, that's old school Cal.
You know, as you're saying this, I'm having flashbacks to the UMass, like Marcus Camby, Lou Rowe, Dana yeah. Dingle, Dante Bright. Like that old school Cal is what you're talking about. Because I think, and I have been at fault at this, Coach, I forgot how he got here, right? Because I think about him yep. now, and I don't think as much about his UMass teams were nasty and mean. But yeah. but once you let's be real, once you become a multimillionaire and huge celebrity like he is, can you really go back to that?
Yeah. Me personally, I think you can. Now, here's the thing: can you do that in this age of college athletics? Can you do that with this age of transfer portal, NIL? You know, he said that to me. I'm gonna pick up and leave. He said I wasn't playing hard, but maybe in a little bit more aggressive way. So, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, look, Cal's UMass teams, they had a chip, right? I mean, like, swaggy Cal's great, you know? But, like, old school Cal, you didn't want to play those teams. And maybe not as talented. Camby was good, but you're like, you talk about that, right? You're talking about, you know, who's the big kid from Atlantic City who I tried to recruit rebounds at? The hell out of the ball.
Well, whoever. So the rebounder type, yeah. Physical types.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so like you can collect and acquire talent, but how do you make them a team and how do you get them to be really be winning players? And, you know, that's the hard thing. Can you get guys to focus on one thing? Because with all the stuff that goes around these kids today, workout guys, grassroots coach, NIL, collectives, parents' pressure to get to the league. Oh, where does winning fit in? And he's got a great group of guys. I've been around their team a bunch. Let me tell you something. Not a good group of guys, but a great group of guys. But also a great group of guys that, you know, probably need to be coached harder. I mean, plain and simple. And, like, coaching someone hard doesn't mean be demeaning. Coaching someone hard is being demanding. And I'm not sure, especially on the defensive end, or when things got tough, that they were not tough enough. I mean, it's plain and simple. You know, you watch it. I mean, Oakland just out-toughed them. And as a coach, that makes it impossible to sleep. I'm just telling you. I mean, why am I talking to you guys? I mean, we didn't win enough games. But I'll tell you what, most nights I could put my head on a pillow and know my guys competed. And I don't think Kentucky yesterday competed the way John Calipari would expect them to compete. And that's a reflection on him. And he's got to own that because in the end, that's, you know, as coaches, you're responsible how hard your guys play.
Well, Coach, amazing stuff. Seth Greenberg is going to be all over ESPN today talking about not only Kentucky, but, of course, all of the NCAA tournament. We appreciate the time.
And by the way, it was not a foul. It was a fall. It was not a foul. It was a fall. It was not a foul.
Well, I have Kansas, I think, going to the finals like an idiot. So I'm
good. Well, you're a happy man.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
that's a bad pick, too, though.
Yeah, I'm aware. Thank you, Coach. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, there's Seth Greenberg. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Coming up, we're going to look at the women's side with somebody that CC put on his list of people he wanted to watch the NCAA tournament with, and maybe he'll get the opportunity to today. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
While the NCAA Women's Tournament gets going today on the ESPN family of networks, Carolyn Peck, former head coach, Purdue, won a championship there, Florida, ESPN women's college basketball analyst. And I should mention that we did our ESPN personality draft the other day of people you would want to watch the NCAA tournament with. And CeCe, you chose?
Coach Peck.
And she joins us now. Thank you for a couple of minutes. Let's start with this. What's a bigger story heading into the tournament, Caitlin Clark or South Carolina?
Oh, well, I think they're both two very interesting stories that are very different. Okay, she's got South Carolina that's on this undefeated streak, and after they've replaced five players that went to the WNBA, how are they here, and how will they continue to roll through the tournament? And then Caitlin Clark, I don't think anybody wants to see her college career end. They want Iowa to continue to roll so we can continue to watch those logo threes.
Coach Peck, we heard the Angel Reese soundbite during our rejoin about how she's not afraid, or LSU is not afraid, of South Carolina. But we've already established that you ain't got to be afraid to get your butt kicked. I'm curious, from your perspective, is there a fear factor that comes along with South Carolina with what Don Staley has built in recent years and how this team has been playing all season long?
Well, I'll tell you what South Carolina and Don Staley have done is they have taken on the reputation that we were used to seeing when Pat Summitt was coaching at Tennessee. I think people always had a little anxiety when they had to face Rocky Top. And then Gino Auriemma did that at Connecticut. You had to get over the name that was on the front of the jersey. And I think the same applies when it comes to South Carolina. They're just dominant. And it used to be just you had to worry about getting your shot blocked, or were you going to be able to get a rebound? But now also, can you stop South Carolina from the three-point line?
Carolyn, when you look at South Carolina, obviously no one's been able to stop them this weekend, but when a team is going up against them, what's the game plan that they need to have going in there? Is there a game plan you can put together to stop South Carolina?
Well, you've got to always go in, number one, with a belief that you can compete. And I think that the biggest thing that you've got to do against South Carolina is you got to limit possession. So you got to take the air out of the ball. Slow it down, but when you take the air out of the ball, you got to be extra careful, and you've got to secure the basketball because you don't want to turn it over. I talked to Ashlyn Watkins yesterday, and I said, are we going to see a dunk in the tournament? And she said, that's my plan. I want one so bad. And she got this big old smile on her face. But when you're facing South Carolina, you can't let this be an up-and-down game. So if you limit the possessions, and then you can get – if you can get a good shot, give yourself an opportunity, retreat in transition to stop them in transition – make it a low-scoring game, you give yourself a chance.
We're on Sportsmanlike here on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, along with Michelle Smallman, Chris Canty, Evan Cohen with you, Carolyn Peck, ESPN and SEC Network college basketball analyst, and, of course, national champ at Purdue, joining us here on ESPN Radio. Caitlin Clark is the biggest star in college basketball, maybe the biggest star ever. Can she lead her team to the Final Four?
She is a tough player to stop, that's for sure. Anybody that's averaging 33 points a game. And then she has a supporting cast, and they all can shoot the basketball, but they cannot afford to have an off night. So if a team decides that they're going to, and everybody's tried it, and they've not been able to stop Caitlin Clark, but if you could slow her down, I think that they're in the toughest bracket in this tournament. You know, the possibility of having to face an LSU, that'd be tough. That'd be really interesting. I think that I don't have Iowa going to the Final Four, but that doesn't mean that they can't get there. You got Kate Martin who can shoot it, Gabby Marshall. Hannah Stolke is going to be key for them. That's their post player, and she runs the floor down Main Street like a deer, and that post getting Iowa out in transition will definitely help them.
Carolyn, you said that you don't have them advancing past a certain point, but everyone's going to be watching Caitlin Clark. This is the only thing that's missing from her resume right now is that national title. And with all that being said, knowing the challenges that lay before Iowa, but the fact that the whole world is going to be watching Caitlin Clark, how much pressure is on her right now?
You know, the thing that I really like about Caitlin Clark is the confidence that she plays with, and she keeps away the outside noise. She is only about those women that are on her team. They are like sisters. And so I like her mental toughness and her mental approach to the game. I don't think that she's worried about what we're thinking on the outside. She knows that the fans want to continue to see her play, especially the Iowa fans. So I think she's playing with freedom. When she made the announcement that she was going on to the WNBA after this season, I think that was freeing for her, too. That decision's made. Now she can just put her nose to the grind and try to go after that championship.
Coach, undoubtedly the headliners for the tournament, Dawn Staley in South Carolina, Caitlin Clark in Iowa. But there are two number one seeds that are led by two superstar freshmen, Madison Booker with Texas, and then, of course, Juju Watkins at USC. Which superstar freshman has the best chance to get their team to a Final Four this year?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think that Juju Watkins, we talked about Caitlin Clark. Well, there's another star in Juju Watkins who can put up points. She can manufacture some offense, and she's got a surrounding cast around her. Her head coach, Lindsey Gottlieb, remember when she was at Cal? She took Cal to the Final Four, so she is not. This is not unknown territory for Lindsey Gottlieb. I think that the USC on the West Coast has a great chance of getting themselves to Cleveland.
Carolyn, is there a player or a coach that we have not mentioned that we should be mentioning heading into the NCAA Women's Tournament today on all the ESPN family of networks?
Well, today I have North Carolina and Michigan State. Michigan State has Robin Fralick. That it's her first year at Michigan State, and in her first year, she has gotten Michigan State to the NCAA Tournament. And this is a team that is not afraid to shoot the ball. They average 9 threes a game. They play a quick-paced, up-tempo, and they don't even have a true center. So a team that plays fast-paced like that, similar to Ohio State, hey, listen, you got to watch out because this is a team, should they advance past North Carolina and South Carolina get past Presbyterian, that would be a great matchup.
Carolyn, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. Have fun today with the tourney.
Oh, yeah, I always have fun when it's tournament time.
There she is, Carolyn Peck, nice ESPN college basketball analyst. Of course, won a championship at Purdue as the head coach there. You can be a part of our tournament challenge on the ESPN Tournament Challenge app. Fill out up to 25 women's brackets today for your chance to win, create and join groups, compete against others like us, and the app makes it easy to compete and share your information and your final four picks across all social channels with all the background information there. And we are doing very well on the men's side, at least on Unsportsmanlike. We are in tied for third place right now. Emmett Golden from Game Night in first place, Harry Douglas, Freddie and Harry second place, and CC and I amongst those that are tied for third place. Smalls in second to last.
but the national champ's still alive.
Yeah. Well, I think literally every single person's national champ is still alive, Smalls.
Well, someone could have picked Kentucky. I don't know.
Right. On the ESPN radio host.
Somebody could have.
I don't know who everybody picked.
Did. Well, it's on there on the ESPN. So literally, I love that Smalls is like defense.
I don't have it pulled up right now.
Smalls' defense is my champion is still alive. Literally everyone's champion is still alive.
Okay, fine.
But you're not Joe Fortenbaugh, who's in last place.
That's right.
That's right. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
We're about a month or so away from the NFL draft. We will all be there in Detroit, getting excited for the draft, doing the shows there Thursday and Friday. CeCe will be part of the ESPN Radio coverage of the draft, and one other person, Smalls, will be there with us, and that is Nuno, our producer.
Yes.
So if we're going to Detroit, Nuno's coming with us. He becomes...
Duno.
Detroit Nuno. All right. Looking forward to that evolution.
I don't know if I'm on board with Duno. No. I don't know if I'm on board with it.
Oh, because? The name, yeah.
Yeah, okay. The name. I mean, Nuno in Detroit, yes. I'm signing up for that. But Duno, though?
But we loved Fluno. Fluno was epic.
Yeah, but Fluno was a part of Florida Man, right? Like, it's the whole Florida Man thing. And Nuno being Florida Man for at least a few days is always going to be entertaining. Like, him getting the mani-pedi, sitting back in the chair. Like, that's a thing. But I don't know about Duno.
I love Fluno.
What about Dino?
Dino?
Detroit Nuno?
Yeah.
Dino.
Yeah.
Dino sounds,
I like that, Pat.
Dino sounds like somebody that Otani's interpreter might owe some money. I don't know.
All right, so
gotta get the funds to Dino, yeah, man. He's trusting me.
I'm telling you.
All right, what's the odds that Evan, because I asked this during a break, is going to want to go take a picture with like 8 Mile or Mom Spaghetti, something of that nature?
100%.
The M&M thing.
100% probable.
Well, the Mom Spaghetti is actually a restaurant, right?
Oh,
yeah, it's a restaurant.
Yes. But where is that located? Is that downtown Detroit, wherever we're staying, like near there?
Well, let's go to our Detroit guru, Javonte.
Yeah, downtown Detroit. Stay away from 8 Mile, though. I wouldn't go there and take pictures.
So stay away from that.
All right, well, I think I'll stay away from that. And then maybe, okay, so Mom Spaghetti, yeah.
Good advice from Javonte.
Like, you're not going to want to, Smalls? You're definitely going to want to go to Mom Spaghetti.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
But I do need to know where the spots are in Detroit. When I go somewhere, I like to know where all of the local spots are. I need to have the local cuisine. I know Detroit is famous for Detroit-style pizza, so I'm going to work that in. But what else is Detroit known for? Because I need to make my list here of things that we need to see. Because I've never been to Detroit. I'm excited to go.
You've never been to Detroit in your life?
Only once. I was going to Michigan State with Russillo and Cannell, and we flew into Detroit, and we stopped there and had lunch, and then we drove to Michigan State.
Okay, so you have been to Detroit.
But like for like an hour, so I don't really count it. I had lunch in Detroit.
I went to the Detroit Super Bowl with the Steelers and the Seahawks, and the weather was so horrific. and like nobody could get, it was pre-Uber, nobody could get cabs anywhere. It was brutal at that
time.
Oh
man, I feel so bad that you had to go to the Super Bowl.
Well, I didn't, well, yeah, okay, whatever, Pat, shush. Anyway, so yeah, that's the only, I think that's the only time I've been to Detroit, but Detroit-style pizza, is that actually, because that is where I would go too, is that actually the delicacy that they're known for though?
Gervonta?
I missed what you said, Pat was talking.
Pat,
can you just worry about this show, Pat, maybe, and not whatever show you're doing?
Gervonta, we need to know what are the delicacies in Detroit outside of the pizza.
I'll have to check with my sources because I might give y'all directions to the wrong places. So
okay.
I'll get back to you on that.
No, but
check
not,
with your people.
Not
let
even
us
the
know.
Places, but what is known as Detroit delicacies?
It's like Detroit pizza, as you said, and then got Coney Island, and a lot of people there eat like chicken shawarmas.
What's Coney Island? I know what the place is. What is the food Coney Island?
Oh, you just go there. You just get like obviously like Coney dogs, or you probably can get chicken and what sorts of anything you want.
Basically, Detroit food is just New York food
in the Midwest.
Pizza and hot dogs. Is that what we're talking about?
It seems like it. Interesting.
Yeah, okay. That's what you want. That's what you're going for.
I don't know that you're
that's
really
Chicago
selling,
too.
Yeah, I don't know that he's selling it that well. We need somebody to help us at Unsports ESPN as to what the Detroit delicacies are. But as we're getting ready for that part of the draft, the Arizona Cardinals have the fourth pick in the draft. Monty Osenforth, their general manager, yesterday spoke to the media as he gets ready for the draft, and he's open for business.
There'll be a big neon sign that says open, and we'll, I don't like it blinking. That kind of messes with my eyes, but yeah, we're always going to be listening.
What does always listening and open for business mean when you have the fourth pick in a three quarterback draft?
That means that you're probably going to trade down.
Mm-hmm. Because now we should look at it as a four quarterback draft.
Well,
maybe?
I think that's how people around the NFL are looking at it. With all of the JJ McCarthy buzz post scouting combine, he's going to have his pro day today. So I'm sure that the NFL world will be descending on Ann Arbor to watch him throw at Michigan. But yeah, it's starting to feel like this is going to be a four quarterback draft, and that if you want to guarantee yourselves one of those guys, you're going to have to move up to that number four spot because Arizona has already put it out there in the ether that they're entertaining trading down.
And there's a lot of teams that I could imagine calling right now to see what they need to give up to get to number four. Denver, I'm mm-hmm. sure, is on the line. I would imagine the Raiders are picking up the phone. Minnesota. And how about the New York Giants?
Yeah.
What would they have to give up to get from six to four? Because clearly they're in the quarterback business as well. And the fastest way for you to ensure that you're going to be able to get a quarterback is to move higher in the draft.
No doubt about it. And the draft value trade chart says that the Giants would probably have to give up a second round pick or maybe a high third round pick. But the Arizona Cardinals may make the Giants pay a premium because they know they want one of those quarterbacks. And when you look at the move that Minnesota made last Friday to add an additional first round pick to this year's draft capital, you just got to believe that that's one of the teams that's angling to get the fourth quarterback on the board. And I checked during the break on the odds for teams to draft JJ McCarthy, and guess who's number one on the list? The Minnesota Vikings.
Really?
Whose first pick is 11th. There's no way, based on what we're hearing happening, that JJ McCarthy is going to fall out of the top 10. So if the Minnesota Vikings have the best odds at minus 140 to draft JJ McCarthy, you know they're going to make a move. So if you're another team that's in love with JJ McCarthy, you're going to have to move up, presumably inside of the top five, in order to have a crack at being able to take him.
So that's one part of this, right? Is like mm-hmm. the team's moving up to get J.J. McCarthy, theoretically, or the fourth quarterback, whomever that is. Should the Cardinals be in the business of passing on Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Well, it depends on how much separation in the grades you have between Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers, who's starting to become the second quarterback, the consensus around being the second wide receiver in this class. So, like, to me, that's what you're asking yourselves, is what we can pick up in the way of draft capital worth it in terms of getting the lesser player at the position of need? So we need a wide receiver. Marvin Harrison Jr. is clearly the best wide receiver in this class. He's been the best wide receiver in college football the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Would we forego the opportunity to draft him, knowing that we can get Malik Nabers, who's also a really good wide receiver in his own right, and we're going to pick up draft capital as a result of making that move? I don't have the answer to that, but the fact that they're willing to trade out of that spot lets you know that that's something that's okay with them.
But then I think about the fact that even though they're committed to Kyler Murray, there's still some gray area there, and they need to put the highest level of talent around him to make sure that that's the right decision for them, that they didn't move on from Kyler Murray and that they're doubling down on him. So there is a part of me that even if they like Malik Nabers, if they still have Marvin Harrison Jr. ranked above him, knowing that they could take him at four and that you could give Kyler Murray a weapon of that magnitude, even though there would be teams calling, that might be hard for me to pass up if I'm Arizona.
I also wonder if you're Arizona and you're believing in Kyler Murray, which I'm not a huge believer that he's a franchise quarterback in this league. He's their franchise quarterback. I don't know that he's a dominant Super Bowl winning quarterback. There's also an argument in my mind to just continuously drafting offensive linemen to protect this guy, right? Even if you have B-level wide receivers, A-level protection with B-level wide receivers is better than A-level receivers with B-level protection.
No, I'm with you on that one, but here's the thing. Kyler Murray has not been in a situation where he's been devoid of talent around him. Like, I mean, once upon a time, Kyler Murray had James Conner as his running back. He had A.J. Green, DeAndre Hopkins, and Christian Kirk.
He's had talent
around him. It ain't like he hasn't had talent around him, but it just hasn't resulted in them being able to do high-level winning. Now they got the franchise turned around, and that's what you would expect a number one overall pick to do. But I'm not in the business of trying to do what's in Kyler Murray's best interest if I'm in the Arizona Cardinals right now. To me, it's about putting my program in position to have sustained success and putting together a roster that has cornerstone players that can become the identity of what we're building. I don't know whether or not Kyler Murray factors into the math, but I think they're just in the business of collecting talent right now that they can use to form an identity that will allow them to win in the future.
So as we sit here today, based on the comments made by Monty Osenford, the general manager of the Cardinals yesterday, your assumption, both of you, is that when the fourth pick hits in the NFL draft, the Arizona Cardinals will not make that pick.
No.
It's subject to change, but as we sit here today.
The Arizona Cardinals will not pick inside the top five.
Wow. Smalls, same thing?
I'm there too.
I think they're going to have to get blown away to get that, to trade that pick. And teams may do it.
There's some quarterback hungry teams out there.
Coming up.
Starving.
Has a Hall of Fame coach potentially lost
get
his
him an
way.
IV,
and
a
can
G2,
he get it back?
We'll electrolytes. Desert thirsty.
NAD.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan, Canty, and Michelle.